Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Arsenal Özil, marca Mesut Özil, corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud, marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud, gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. Goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning. Goodly morning. It feels goodlier than many of the last few mornings that we've done this podcast.
It does. I'm glad of that too, I have to say. Everything in context and what have you. But I'm glad that there's an element of goodliness to the morning this morning. I think we all need it.
I think so. Yeah, why not start the week with a bit of goodliness? I mean, it was once our trademark. And now it's belongs to the past, seemingly. I'm glad to return to it.
Yes.
I mean, we won a football match and everything.
It's marvellous. Marvellous, Japes, altogether. How is your show, by the way? I know that, obviously, we were plugging it last week on the Arscast Extra. How did it all go?
It went very well. We plugged it successfully enough that a few people came up to me afterwards and said that they were listeners to the show. So thanks very much for coming along if you did. But yeah, it was really good fun. The sort of only problem with it was a 7 o'clock kickoff, if you will. So
yeah.
I ended up missing, to be honest, most of the goals in real time of the Lincoln game, so I had to go back and watch it later that night. But I saw the first half, which was probably not the half to see, really, of that game.
No, it wasn't great. I mean, the first half was pretty dismal. By any standards, it was a bit grim. They looked like a group of players who had just been beaten 10-2 by Bayern Munich on aggregate. I don't know why that would be, but that's kind of the way they looked.
An uncanny resemblance, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess it was those players, wasn't it? It was very much those players. Not a great deal of rotation. Or
no.
Were there any changes? Only
Kieran Gibbs.
I think
Kieran Gibbs. For Nacho Monreal. And that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So being a little bit...
Petr Cech for David Ospina. David Ospina apparently was a little bit injured, so he couldn't play.
I thought Emi Martinez might play, I must say. I think that was partly just because he put a picture on Instagram saying, like, Lincoln tomorrow or something like that. And I thought, maybe.
They should stop being so, what's the word, vague. If you're going to put up a picture on Instagram that's hinting at something, just fucking say it. Go, I'm playing against Lincoln tomorrow. Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to see, a bit more honesty in social media. Fuck you, I'm playing against Lincoln. None of this like, ooh, is he or isn't he? Has he dropped a hint about whatever? And this is not specific to Emi Martinez, who seems like a nice guy, but footballers in general, be a bit more out there, guys. Come on, show your real personality. Let go of the media training. Yeah, exactly.
Or just put one on Instagram saying, I'm not playing Lincoln tomorrow, and I'm furious about it. Just tell it like it is.
Yeah, I'm aghast at the manager's decision to leave me out. Having not played me all season, he's continuing to not play me. What's going on here?
That sounds like you're talking about Lucas Perez's Instagram.
Oh, well, yeah. Do you want to talk about Lucas Perez a bit? Should we start with talking about Lucas Perez?
Because on the subject of the lineup, like, that was the really big surprise to me. I was like, surely this is one of the few games in which Lucas Perez is allowed to play.
Yeah. Because he's played in pretty much all the FA Cup games. That is how Arsene Wenger has, in his own strange way, attempted to keep the player happy or given some playing time at the very least. Mm. But he wasn't in the team. Alexis Sanchez scored a goal. Theo Walcott scored a goal. Olivier Giroud scored a goal. So you can't necessarily point to the team selection being incorrect or misfiring in any way. But it really does feel like he's a guy who, despite playing pretty well almost every time he's come on, isn't a guy who Arsene Wenger is convinced by or has a great deal of faith in. And I know that you have a little bit of insight into this and how the deal all came about last summer. Now, I don't know if, how much detail you can go into. I don't want you to be like, you know, Emmy Martinez on Instagram. You don't have to be that. You don't have to be that direct. But you know, you can. We can deal with a little bit of vagueness if we can try and get some understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I made a couple of phone calls about it yesterday because I thought it'd probably come up today. And one thing I can say is that I know that last season when Lucas was at Deportivo, having a very good year, in the first half of the season, I think he scored about a dozen goals, 15 goals. He slowed down in the second half of the campaign, but he attracted a lot of attention. And I know Arsenal watched him about 10 to 12 times by various means. And ultimately, this kind of head of scouting ultimately was briefing that he felt that Lucas was a player better suited to the lower half of the Premier League. Right. That was Arsenal's point of view on the situation. They were right. Like, he's not a sort of Champions League player, someone who could, you know, maybe go to a mid-table club, probably lower half of Premier League. So, and that was at the start of last summer's transfer window. Certainly, that was the scouting department's assessment of the situation. Obviously, in the course of the summer, things changed. And the main thing that changed was the failed pursuit of Jamie Vardy. And then, obviously, the club felt maybe they needed to do something. And there were other targets. I mean, you'll remember yourself, there were a lot of links to... I mean, Lacazette was certainly one of the names who was discussed. Who else was on the agenda? I forget now.
I can't remember from a striking point of view, but, you know, there wasn't... I mean, I think that the issue was, when it came to strikers last summer, was the dearth of options, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Morata was another one that there was a lot of talk about, but ultimately Madrid exercised their option on him. So, rather late in the day, Lucas was actually right at the point of signing for Everton. He'd been holding out for a Champions League club, but Everton had come in. There was a minimum fee release clause of 20 million euros, which made it a sort of expedient deal to do. It was, I mean, I think hours away from happening, and then... the player's head was basically turned because Arsenal came in at the last minute. Now, what changed in terms of the assessment of the player, I actually don't know. Is it that Arsene Wenger, you know, acted without the sort of consent or advice of the scouting department? Is it maybe that one of the analytics services, like StatDNA, for example, suggested, well, look, this Lucas guy is, you know, better than perhaps we assessed in person? Or was he simply the next name on the list? Or was it just a deal that was doable? Either way, it represented a big turnaround from Arsenal's position on the player earlier in the summer. We've seen that before. It happened with Per Mertesacker. Arsenal rejected the chance to sign Per Mertesacker several times before they eventually did it. And Arsene Wenger's come to really love the player. But it feels like in this case, maybe some of those doubts that were there, you know, linger. I do think it feels like he's kind of not really a key part of Wenger's plans. That's the thing. He doesn't seem to be making as much effort to integrate him as he would, say, an Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain or someone for whom there's a longer-term vision.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a point yesterday that was interesting as well, is that even if they had these doubts about him before they signed him and looked at him probably as a squad player, somebody who could, you know, do a job rather than be a guy who's going to stake a claim for a first team place, you know, at 28 years of age, coming to a club like Arsenal from a club like Deportivo, I don't think anybody's under any illusions that he was going to be the star striker, but still a guy who could come in and do a job. And from what we've seen from him this season, the doubts that maybe the manager or the scouting team had have been dispelled somewhat by the level of the performances that he's put in. You know, in very little playing time, he has contributed. He's got end product to his game. And I think that's kind of what frustrates people a little bit, is that, you know, he has done well and has probably, over the course of the season, merited a bit more playing time or been rewarded by keeping his place or starting games when other players, for example, we go back to the... to the team selection against Bayern or Lincoln, and Arsene Wenger said the reason that he wanted to play that team was because he thought they played well against Bayern in the first 53 minutes before Koscielny was sent off, and they deserved another chance. And we've seen that quite a bit from the manager this season, that he seems much more willing to give players who haven't performed another chance and another chance and another chance, rather than mix it up a bit and say, okay, well, look, you didn't do it in that game and you didn't do it in the previous game. I'm going to put you on the bench for a little bit and put this guy in and see if he can at least generate some competition or generate some sort of competitive environment. And I think that's probably what frustrates people a little bit about what's going on with Lucas Perez.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that, you know, even if those doubts did exist, he has dispelled those with the quality of his performances. He's shown that he's a very, very viable option. I mean, I thought Tim Stillman said something interesting on Twitter yesterday, which is that he said that to him, Lucas always seemed like a potentially a one-season signing. You know, he said he compared it to Davosuke coming in, that he felt it was very much a quick fix to kind of cover for the absence of Danny Welbeck. And looking at it now, you know, it feels as if that may well be the case, because, you know, Lucas must have been very frustrated to not play yesterday. And there have been a lot of stories in the media about him potentially being unhappy. I think almost irrespective of how he feels about it, his future has to be in some doubt come the summer, because, you know, he's really should have had more chances than he's been afforded. And it seems like, I guess a lot will depend on the manager, won't it? A lot will depend on what happens with the manager. If Arsene Wenger stays, it's very difficult to see Lucas stays.
Yeah. Do you think there's an element in some ways of when a team is underperforming and when results aren't good, that the guys who aren't playing become a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for here, that reputationally they improve
because they
haven't been in the team, and you're going, well, look, anybody but that fucking guy that didn't do it against, you know, that opposition in that game, you're looking for something a bit fresh and looking for something a bit new. It's sort of the way when a player is out injured, he becomes imbued with superhuman qualities that the team misses beyond all repair. You know, that we can't do without this player, but when the player is fit and when he's in the team, we still have these poor performances and poor results. You know, that this guy is not necessarily the be all and end all or the guy that will fix all our problems.
Yeah, I definitely think there's an element of that, and it's kind of, you know, like anyone but the guys who are out there losing these big games that we see regularly. There's a certain novelty to Lucas that makes us probably a bit warmer to him. But I think, curiously enough, the thing that probably counts against him the most is probably what I like about him most, which is his age profile and his experience. I think probably Arsene doesn't view him as kind of a long-term project. You know, he's 28, 29 soon enough. But actually, when I watch him play, that kind of slightly hardened professionalism, that rough edge and that sort of know-how is actually what I really like about watching him play. There seems a natural intelligence to his game that is kind of born of experience and born of someone who's kind of fought their way up through the Europe's divisions to make it to the Champions League.
And I
like that about him, but I think that it probably works against him a bit. I mean, what's your assessment of the signing in general? That, like, do you think it was kind of a... Would you classify it as a panic buy, or how do you look at it now, a few months on?
Yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily a panic buy, but it was certainly one where they probably exhausted all other possibilities or potential candidates, because it came very late, didn't it? It was really
late.
They
were running out of time,
yeah,
definitely.
They were running out of time. But, you know, at the same time, they were buying a guy who played extremely well for Deportivo. And I liked, like you, the age profile of him, the fact that he was experienced. You know, we saw that in his performances. You know, to me, he was brought in as a squad player. And I don't have any real issue with that. I think he was always going to be someone who was going to be in and out of the team. Because you do have Olivier Giroud, you do have Alexis Sanchez, you've got Theo Walcott, goal-scoring Theo Walcott, who Arsene Wenger likes to put in his team when he's scoring goals, as we know. Danny Welbeck coming back in January, that was always going to add some some competition to the squad. Alex Iwobi playing in some of the wide positions as well. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain playing in one of the front three positions for most of the first half of the season. So it was always going to be competitive. I just thought that given the way that he played and given what he produced, I feel like he deserved or has deserved a little more playing time. That's where I would stand it. I don't think he was ever going to be the guy that was going to be the answer to all our striking problems, but I do feel like he hasn't had really a fair crack of the whip. You know. But then you look at when Giroud came back in, and what did Giroud do when he came back into the team? He scored in, I don't know, how many games did he come on and score in as a sub, and he scored in however many consecutive starts. So, you know, it has been relatively competitive, and I don't necessarily think that scoring goals has been our biggest problem this season. You know, if you look at the amount of goals that we've scored, it's not like we're miles behind anybody else, or that is the key issue that we have to address. The issues lie further behind the front three, I think. I can see that point of view, but I just feel that having watched him and having seen the way that he plays, I would have liked to see him get a bit more, because I like the way that he plays, and he seems like a good guy, and he's got end product. He's quick. He's strong. It just is one of those situations, I think, that happens at football clubs, where a guy who comes in and isn't necessarily the first choice ends up being a bit marginalised.
Yeah, I think any player who scores a hat-trick in the Champions League and then finds himself out of the team at the weekend, you know, has probably got a fair gripe. I think the biggest thing, really, that we haven't really touched on is that thing of Alexis kind of emerging as this central striker. I think that probably hindered Lucas's chances as well. You know, when he was signed at the start of the season, it was kind of viewed as competition for Olivier Giroud. But in fact, even Giroud himself found himself playing second fiddle to Alexis, which I'm not sure was ever part of a, you know, necessarily a long-term plan, you know, certainly in the early part of the summer. So, he's been a bit unfortunate, to be honest with you. And, you know, when cup games like Lincoln do come around, that seems like a great chance to give him a run out. But I guess Arsene Wenger felt it was important for those players to get Bayern out of their system.
Mm. Well, look, they did to an extent, I guess. The second half performance was a lot better than the first. The nervousness that was clearly present in the team and the way that they were playing was dissipated by the goal late in the first half. Theo Walcott making it 1-0 just before halftime, rather entertainingly in the injury time that was added on because of the stoppages. One because the guy elbowed Mustafi, and the other because he got elbowed by Koscielny, the big striker lad. So that was quite funny. And then second half, you know, goals. There was a lot more fluency to Arsenal's play in the second period.
Yeah, that much was clear. I mean, the first half was kind of interesting. It was kind of half. I mean, I did think, you know, Lincoln, the commentary was almost patronising at times, but I thought they did pretty well. I mean, should we talk about the commentary? Or?
Well, it was really fucking hard to listen to, wasn't it? It really was. Look, I get that everybody wants the magic of the cup and the underdog to do well, but the BT Sport commentary was particularly bad. And, you know, there were bits of it where you're thinking, okay, look, it's fine to be on the side of the underdog, and it's fine to want them to do well, because why wouldn't you? You know, if it was us watching Lincoln City against Manchester United, you know, we'd enjoy a little bit of partisan commentary to an extent, but there were bits where I felt they went a bit too far, in the sense that there was one terrible tackle on Kieran Gibbs late in the half where Chris Sutton goes, oh, you know, I feel for him there a bit, you know, getting booked. He was a little bit late. I mean, he wasn't a little bit late. The ball was gone and he came launching in at the side of Gibbs, who did well to get himself up in the air and avoiding a serious injury. And there was another tackle on Mesut Ozil on the edge of their box, and they went, oh, that's a tasty tackle there by the Lincoln defender. And you're thinking, no, that's not a tasty tackle. That was potentially a really, really, really dangerous tackle. I think it could easily have been a red card, and those kind of double standards are what encourage those players to play the way that they do. I mean, even the build-up to the game, one of the Lincoln players was saying, well, if Mesut Ozil tries to run past me, or no, Alexis Sanchez, if he tries to run past me, I'm going to smash him. I'm going to smash him. And you're going, come on. But in the end, it turns out that was the guy. That was the guy who got smashed, which led to this rather amusing piece of commentary by Chris Sutton. So this is when Mesut Ozil goes into the challenge with that guy.
Oh, but no, he's just shoved out of it by Ozil. No free kick is given.
Well, the linesman's only 5 yards away.
I mean, I love that. Oh, come on! Like Chris Sutton, because it reminded me of a few things. That little clip there reminded me of a few things. So where he goes, come on, it was a bit like Peter Griffin from Family Guy.
Come on! Come on!
All right. And then there's the other bit.
True.
Yeah, the other bit there is the little chuckle at the end. So I'm going to play the Chris Sutton bit first. So this is him. All right. Now, have you ever seen a film called The Room?
Yeah, I have seen The Room.
You have seen a film called The Room, which is one of the most terrible films ever made. A guy called Tommy Wiseau. Yeah, it really is. It's dreadful, and you see all the things. But have a listen just one more time. Let me see if I can do this. Have a listen one more time to the Chris Sutton laugh. Here it comes. All right, and this is Tommy Wiseau from that film, The Room. And this is the way he laughs. Uncanny, right?
Well, I mean, now we know if they ever make the long-awaited biopic of Chris Sutton's life, who should play him? I mean, he is, he's intolerable, I think, Chris Sutton. I think I've said it on here before that he might be my least favourite pundit, and he really confirmed that status at the weekend.
Yeah, he was absolutely terrible. It was painful listening to him for 90 minutes. It really was. Like the first half, the first 45 minutes in particular, Arsenal were shite and Chris Sutton was on co-commentary. It was like, oh my God. And there were times actually where I was sort of on the verge of kicking in my TV listening to the pair of them. It was just like, oh, fuck, will you just shut the fuck up? Like both of you. I really feel like I've said in the blog today, there's got to be a no commentary option. You know, these broadcasters, they've got the technology to do it. Just do it. You know, the consumers deserve that. The price we have to pay, you know, for a Sky subscription, for BT Sports subscription, and we have to listen to that commentary. And while I'm on the subject of BT Sport, you know, it's a pain in the arse when they post clips on their Twitter and I keep getting, this is not available in your country. And go, well, I pay. What? You get that too?
I think so. I think I do. But
what
maybe that's
country
maybe
is it available in then? If it's not available in your country or my country, what country is it available? Like Malta?
I don't know. I hope I'm right about that, but I've definitely got a recollection of it. But maybe it's just because I'm using some weird VPN or something, trying to access something illegal. I don't know.
Oh.
But it must be very annoying for you.
It is. It's very annoying.
It's that annoying,
yeah, you know. But, you know, I suppose the one thing that you could say is that the better Arsenal played, the more unhappy he became, very visibly, or not visibly, sadly we couldn't see him, but audibly unhappy. And he got really, like, the reaction to that Mesut Ozil challenge is something that will live with me for forever and ever. Like his sort of squawks of misery as that happened is just like, I've got to play it again. It's just like,
oh, but no, he's just shoved out of it by Ozil. No free kick is given.
Well, the linesman's only 5 yards away.
Oh, the linesman's only 5 yards away.
It's kind of the pundit's nightmare, isn't it? It's the perfect storm. It's Mesut Ozil out muscling, you know, a good solid English player.
Come on.
Shouldn't be allowed. But, you know, that's the thing. Arsenal's players are going to be more athletic, ultimately, than Lincoln's players. That's why it's important to clamp down on things like the tackling, because they won't be used to coming up against players that quick. You know, the reason Kieran Gibbs got in such danger is because he's quicker than most guys. So, you know, he's more likely to get caught. He's more likely to get away. He's lucky he could get away in some respects. I think, it was an absolute... I mean, it's inevitable when you're the Goliath up against the David, but it's very grating as well, and a bit of impartiality in the commentary would be welcome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on.
Come on.
On a line, only 5 yards.
I mean, did you see in the studio afterwards the interaction between Ian Wright and Chris Sutton, slightly redressing the balance?
Oh, I did, yeah. I don't know. I put it on the blog today, but I think people should hear this as well, shouldn't they? I think yeah, it would be definitely good if people heard this. This is in the studio after the game, and Ian Wright is sitting there with Michael Owen and Chris Sutton, and this is what went down. So hang on, let me get this here.
A tweet has just come into us from AB. Who had the better left foot, Wright, Sutton or Owen?
Me. Don't even ask them to. I can't get into yeah, my left foot was.
If Wrighty says that, yeah.
Absolutely. How many chips did you score with your left foot? How many? I've done it. I don't even remember doing it. I didn't even remember what foot I used. That was so good. You can't get into that. You can't get into that party, bro.
No
chance. Me, no problem.
So brilliant. But Sutton there, well, you know, if Wrighty says so, you know.
I mean, the thing is, right, think what you will of Michael Owen, there is definitely an odd man out, isn't there, in that trio of strikers in terms of quality, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the guy sat in the middle, Chris Sutton.
Yeah.
I think, like, Ian Wright sounds almost annoyed there, doesn't he? That sounds like he was listening to the commentary and was pretty irked by himself.
He's just taking the absolute piss, you know? but, you know, I mean, fantastic. Actually, do you remember back in the day when he was at Norwich, I think Arsenal were very, very close to signing Chris Sutton before he went to Blackburn.
Yeah,
and he
that's
went for
very
a,
true.
Did he not go for what was then a British transfer record?
Well, I think I think they were linked again when he went to Chelsea. He signed for Chelsea for about £10 million, and I think Arsenal were quite strongly linked with him at that time as well.
Wow.
Guys, what a near miss.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, he was a disaster at Chelsea, as I recall. It didn't pan out for him, so...
Yeah.
Bullet dodged.
Then he went to Celtic. Come on! Only 5 yards away! So, look, anyway, I think that's the one thing that we can take from this weekend. If nothing else will unite the Arsenal fans, it is Chris Sutton.
I think so. That's it. We've been looking for something to bring harmony back to the supporters. I think there'll be protests at the next home game, but they'll all be against Chris Sutton.
Yeah. Focus on the real
and
issues.
And I liked what you said in your blog about how we've now vanquished Sutton for 2 FA Cup rounds in a row.
Yes.
That's nice. So what about the second half goals? Was there a favourite of yours? I liked the air tackle on Alexis Sanchez.
I did that. Yeah, that was fantastic. It was like a golf shot that misses, wasn't it? It was a lovely finish. A little bit of good fortune, I guess, to get away. But I did like the Giroud goal. I thought the interplay between Alexis and Hector Bellerin was really nice. And the kind of football that we haven't seen often enough from Arsenal this season. I know it's only Lincoln City, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's still a nice goal. Lovely finish and a nice bit of play. So that was good.
It was one of those moments where the class kind of told. You know, when you watch that goal, the intricate approach play, the sort of very nonchalant finish, the lack of celebration, it was one of those reassuring moments where you saw the kind of the gulf between the two sides.
Yeah, and I thought there was a little bit of self-awareness from the team as well in terms of how they celebrated the goals. They didn't go overboard. You know, there was no leaping around or anything like that. It was okay, look, you know, we're getting the job done here, and that's that. You know, we're not going to go over the top.
From maybe the moment where Aaron Ramsey absolutely smashed the ball into the net from half a yard out.
I love that. I have to say, I've got a question about that, so we'll save that for the second half of the podcast. It leaves what's going to be a very, very tasty FA Cup draw this evening, because the final quarterfinal is taking place tonight between Manchester United and Chelsea. That's at Stamford Bridge. So the four teams is going to be either Manchester United or Chelsea, along with Manchester City, Tottenham, and Arsenal. I mean, that is, that's a stellar lineup, isn't it?
It is, it really is.
Apart from Tottenham, obviously.
Yeah, sure. 3 out of 4 in.
3 out of 4, yeah.
it's good for the competition. It's probably less good for us, but it means, you know, if we do win it, it'll be a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I mean, dare I ask you what you would hope for in the draw?
What do I hope for? I don't know. I mean, I don't hope for any of those teams, to be perfectly honest. I hope for, like, Millwall to get through and Northampton Town and Altrincham. That's who I was hoping
to find out that kind of Vincent Janssen was fielded ineligibly or something like that, and then Millwall were put through at their expense.
That would be funny. I can't see that happening, unfortunately. But, you know, what would be more terrifying to you, an FA Cup semi-final against Tottenham or an FA Cup final against Tottenham? What would put your heart worse?
Oh, God, I don't know. See, an FA Cup semi-final with Spurs feels like a kind of a throwback, doesn't it? It feels like there's something sort of historic about that.
Yeah.
I mean, a final would be huge as well. I think I would like to... I don't want Spurs to get to the final.
Yeah.
And I think that I would like to take on the mantle and the challenge of stopping that from happening. You know, as fantastic as an Arsenal-Spurs final would be, that means Spurs would have a final.
Mm.
And I don't want that.
Yeah.
Now, are we the best team to stop them getting it? Probably not. Probably not. But it would be fun. And I think... Also, it rules out the possibility of losing to them in a final, which I just can't even begin to contemplate. So I think I want an Arsenal-Spurs semi.
Well, I mean, you could put the elimination of Spurs in the hands of either Manchester United, Chelsea, or Manchester City as well. I mean, is there one team that you would prefer to draw above all others? Or are you looking at all of them going like, oh, fuck, it's difficult?
I think this might be a controversial opinion. But I think when I look at them, I kind of think maybe City.
Right.
Maybe City. I kind of feel like, you know, we could kind of do a bit of a Monaco and have a good go at City if we had our attacking players in some kind of form by then.
Mm.
But the others are all good at grinding out results, aren't they? United have sort of becoming that team under Mourinho. Chelsea have very much been that team under Conte, and Spurs sort of ominously similar. And those are the teams that, you know, the organised ones. They're the ones we struggle with.
The ones who have like a plan in place and who can defend.
The ones with plans, yeah. They're our bogey teams. The ones with tactics. So I think City maybe. What about you?
Maybe City from a footballing point of view. Like what you say, if we did a Monaco, you know, we could score some goals, but we could also do a Monaco and let in a lot of goals as well.
That could also happen. Yes.
So you know, we want to do a half Monaco. I think that's what we want. So I think if we could do a half Monaco against Manchester City, and then one of those teams in the final, United or Chelsea, I suppose, in the final. Ugh. I don't know. Maybe I feel like if we were to get a team in the final, I'd prefer it to be, oh God, imagine though getting an FA Cup final against Manchester United and beating Mourinho, Wenger beating Mourinho in the FA Cup final, and then calling it a day and just doing a shit on the Manchester United bench as a way to go out. Here's a cup. There you go, Mourinho. You've been waiting to do this for years. It's like the, yeah.
While a disgusted Chris Sutton commentates for BT Sport.
Oh, come on! He can't do a shit on the bench. Jeez.
I mean, look, there's no... A couple of times with the Cup, you know, we've got to this stage and suddenly it's felt a little bit like, oh, it's there to be won.
Mm.
It doesn't feel as much like that this time. I mean, this is a real heavyweight set of semi-finalists. So,
yeah.
Whatever happens this evening between Mourinho and Conte.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, look, there's no easy draw at this stage.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. All right. Well, look, I think we'll just call it a day. No, not a day. Call it a half there. Exactly. We'll take a short little break and we're going to come back with some of the questions that you've posed to us on Twitter and Facebook right after this.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. All right, welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArsBlog. So, do you want to start?
We're ready
or will
now.
I start?
The first half, it was a bit like Arsenal at the weekend, wasn't it? We were recovering from Bayern. It was sort of, you know, steadily making ground, but now. Now we're clicking.
Now we're on it. Yeah. So look, do you want to go first or will I?
By the way, that laugh, that sound like it's making me really self-conscious. Every time I laugh, I'm worried that I sound like Chris Sutton now. So it's like a constant terror for me.
Okay, well, no, you don't. You're all right.
Thanks very much. I will go first. And this is from Anamik Sahar on Twitter, who's at Anamik1977. And they ask, is Ozil in the number 10 role a luxury we cannot afford anymore? I guess this is off the back of the kind of midfield three we've seen in the past couple of games. And I kind of think that although it's been a pretty crap week, that's a little bright spot and maybe a sign of something we could keep using for the remainder of the campaign. Don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a luxury we can't afford when Mesut Ozil's form is the way it is.
Yeah.
At the moment, he's clearly a guy who is a long way from his best. And you do have to wonder that maybe... I do feel like a lot of our problems stem from the fact that our midfield isn't as functional as it should be, to be honest. I think that's an issue that we've spoken about quite a number of times. We don't necessarily have the right duo, so can you make up for that by playing a trio? And perhaps you can. Is he a luxury we can't afford at number 10? You know, I don't really see that Mesut Ozil is any less effective as a player who plays wide from time to time. You know, he does that for the German national team. He plays very well there. He's usually the German national team player of the season. I think he's been 5 out of 6 years. He's been voted their best player. And often he plays in a wider role. But I do, you know, if we need to fix the midfield, or if we haven't got quite the personnel to play two in midfield with a guy like Ozil with a free role who's given license to move around wherever he wants, then maybe that is the case. Maybe we do need to readjust the system or the formation a bit more as a 4-3-3 rather than the 4-2-1-3 whatever the fuck it is. How many number? I couldn't think of numbers there. 4-4-7
4-2-3-1
4-2-3 Yeah, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
I think that Arsenal have struggled this season. Well, certainly in the last few months, let's put it that way, with kind of Ozil as a 10. And I think that this kind of Ramsey, Xhaka, Oxlade-Chamberlain trio has a lot of promise. Now, obviously, Oxlade-Chamberlain went and got himself injured at the weekend, so we don't know. You know, apparently that was precautionary, his withdrawal, but that's the problem with Ox. Whenever he hits a run of form, something seems to pull him back. But I would like to see more of it. And I think Ozil, I think, first of all, he can work wide left or wide right, as you've suggested. And I also think that given that his future at the club is in considerable doubt, that it's not the worst thing to be looking at models for the team that aren't contingent on him playing there. You know?
Okay, but you know, given that, and you mentioned Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, what did you make of the stories that came out in the wake of the Bayern game? I think we all know how the system works, or how it works with players and agents, that it was made clear to a number of newspapers that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain hadn't been yet offered a new deal by the club, despite the fact Arsene Wenger saying in his press conference before the Lincoln game that he rates Oxlade-Chamberlain, he wants to keep him. But Oxlade-Chamberlain, the message coming from his camp is basically that Arsenal have left it late. I don't feel wanted. Even if they offered me a big money deal now, I'm not going to sign it. I mean, that's kind of... whatever about Alexis and Ozil, you know, two star players who might have doubts. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, with the greatest of respect to him, as a player who's got some potential and talent, but hasn't necessarily shown it over the years, it feels a bit off to me that kind of ultimatum is coming from his camp. Whether it's coming from him, you know, I don't think we can say that, but it's certainly coming from his people.
Well, I don't think his people have been shy about, you know, letting the press know that other clubs have been interested in Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain over the past couple of years. I can't think of another Arsenal player who's been linked with so many different teams. Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, West Ham have all been associated with bids for him at some point or other in the last 2 years. And what I do sympathise with him, though, is like, do you not think we've left it rather late to be talking about a new contract? I mean, I can't believe that there hasn't been an offer forthcoming. And I think, I mean, slightly to broaden the issue, you know, I remember Arsene Wenger talking back in the autumn about Oxlade-Chamberlain's contract and about Jack Wilshere's contract and saying, well, that's something that we'll look to address around January time. Well, we're now in March, and it's very clear that there's been no formal offer from Arsenal for Oxlade-Chamberlain, or as far as I'm aware, Jack Wilshere.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of that, really. I think if you're the player, maybe you're smart to be thinking about looking elsewhere, because it doesn't feel like a great declaration from the club that they want to keep you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which seems odd, because he's playing.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it is a bit of a strange one, but that we sort of gone off the point there a little bit. And we discussed it in the Arscast on Friday as well, so if people want to go back and have a listen to that, we discussed Oxlade-Chamberlain. But I just thought, you know, given the way the message came out in the wake of what was a bad night for us, I thought that was a little bit cynical from his people. Again, make it clear that it's not necessarily from him. The player.
No, but let's not forget, it was earlier this season that he made that appearance on Sky. I think I've referenced it a couple of times on here, but where it was quite clear that in his mind, at least, this was a kind of make or break season for him. And I would argue he's done a lot of the things that you would have asked of him in terms of being more productive, in terms of goals and assists. We've talked about him, almost his versatility almost being an obstacle for him. He's never really found a best position. This season, in the last few weeks, it seems like he has done. It seems like, you know, he clearly is a better player in central midfield than he is on the flank. So I think he's done everything that he would have, not everything you would have hoped for, but, you know, he's certainly made strides in the right direction. So I think he's entitled to wonder where this contract offer is. I guess maybe that speaks to just the general uncertainty that surrounds the club. It's not the biggest symptom of it, But it's certainly a symptom. Yeah.
It's part of it. Okay, on Facebook, Oliver Kiddell says, I was happy to win the Lincoln game and was told on social media that to feel that way means I have a small club mentality. I'm not a real Arsenal fan. I'm the reason we always fail, etc. You get the picture. His question is, how far should those Arsenal fans who insist on telling others how they should think and feel after certain results sod off?
quite far. I mean, there's what did you see before the game, certain high profile Arsenal fans saying they hoped Arsenal would lose?
Yeah.
I mean I don't even know where to begin with that. I mean, I'm not even going to mention the people by name because I feel like, you know, a lot of what they say is just an attempt to raise their profile. But
yeah,
I do think there are a few people who are almost subscribing to that way of thinking, and it's a shame, really, because, you know, the FA Cup represents a brilliant opportunity still for us to finish the season on a high, and it's done that before in 2014 and 2015, and those were great occasions, and we've got an opportunity to go and do that again. And I just think that it's this idea that you can't have that kind of balanced view where you can be upset about, say, the Bayern Munich defeat and maybe even upset about the direction of the club or maybe even the identity of the manager, but still support the team on the day. The fact that some people can't seem to grasp that, I find bewildering.
Yeah.
And you know, we should be looking for the positive things, right? Not ignoring them when they do come along.
Yeah, you can't demand silverware and demand success and at the same time hope that your team loses. You can't hold those two positions. It's not, it just doesn't work, you know? And by any measure, a trophy is an achievement. It's success in a tangible form. It's there. It's a trophy. It goes into your trophy cabinet. You lift it up and everybody cheers. You know, and the same people who say, oh, well, fuck the FA Cup, or it's only the FA Cup, or it's only Lincoln City. Are you telling me that if they're watching that game, they're watching a final, they're not going to cheer the goals? They're not going to cheer and be happy if Arsenal win an actual cup? I mean, if you're actually not happy that Arsenal could win a cup, then fine. I don't know. I genuinely don't know how to deal with that. But, you know, the other thing that strikes me is I always find it a bit hard to take when fans start blaming other fans for things that are completely out of control of fans. You know, I don't get this idea that you should blame a fan for what's happening at board level or what's happening at managerial level or the way that the team is performing on the pitch. It's not the fault of any fans.
No.
So I don't, you know, I don't subscribe to that view at all. I mean, on the protests, what did you make of the protest at the weekend? The march for the second successive game, the no new contract, and we want Wenger out, etc., etc.
Yeah, what they're calling it, Wexit. I mean, look, it wasn't particularly well attended, was it? We're talking about a couple of hundred fans, I believe. I actually think I'm pretty proud of the Arsenal fans. I think it's a credit to the supporters who are inside the stadium that for all... Because I feel like probably a lot of those thousands of fans in the ground maybe feel that the time has come for a change at managerial level. But I still feel that what they're doing is turning up and supporting the team. And I think that's great, to be honest. Like, even the Bayern Munich game, I was at the Bayern Munich game, and in the first half particularly, I was really taken aback and proud of the atmosphere that the fans generated for a game, for a tie that was over, and with the side in really difficult circumstances and real uncertainty around the club. I thought the supporters were largely tremendous, and I think that's creditable, to be honest with you. I'm not saying that people are wrong to protest, but I take more pride from those fans who support the team, kind of irrespective of those things, than I do from those that are protesting. I respect everybody's right to do whatever they want. I just think that that's a kind of a bit more admirable. I think it's possible to do both, to be honest. I think it's possible to hold those views and make those views clear in certain ways and still back the club, because that's the constant and the consistent.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's going to go. I mean, is the indication that those processes are going to continue for the remainder of the season?
Well, that's the thing. That's the question I have about it, is that, okay, you had a march before the Bayern game and you made your position very clear. I mean, I don't think anybody's in any doubt as to what the position that those people hold is. They want a new manager. They don't want Arsene Wenger to stay, and they don't want him to sign a new contract. Mm. I think that's, it's clear. The message is pretty clear. And then you have another protest against, in the before the game against Lincoln. And it's the same message. The message hasn't changed. Everybody understands what those protesters are saying. There's no lack of clarity about what it is that they're saying. So we get it. We understand. And you have every right to protest. Nobody's saying that you shouldn't or can't. But how, I mean, is it going to be every game? I mean, how many times do you need to make the same statement?
I guess what they may be hoping is that it grows. You know, I don't know, that momentum gathers behind it. I mean, I suppose the one thing in its favour is it's outside the ground primarily. You know, it's not during the game, which I do think needs to remain kind of largely sacred in that respect. I do think that, you know, chanting against your own manager within a game is not a good thing. And so far, that does seem to be largely the case. I don't know where it's going to go. I mean, there's a plane. There's talk about a plane.
Yeah.
Do you know about the plane?
There's a question here from Damien at Damien AFC. He said, what do you think of the planned airplane protest at West Brom? Doesn't this make us all look like twats?
It probably does. It probably does in the eyes of other clubs. I mean, I know I know what I thought when there was the plane. Was it David Moyes?
Yeah.
The United fans flew a plane. I remember finding that hysterical. And, you know, I think, you know, when you go on Arsenal Fan TV these days, the comments aren't from Arsenal fans. We've become the subject of ridicule for certain other Premier League clubs, for all other Premier League clubs, really. And I think things like that don't help. But, I mean, you know, what you've got to remember is it doesn't have to represent you. It's somebody's choice to do that, and they're putting their money into it. But, you know, it's not kind of in my name.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is that. You know, I didn't think when the United fans who got a plane for David Moyes, I didn't think that was representative of all Manchester United fans. I just thought it was representative of some stupid fucking idiots who thought that this was something that they should do. I mean, it's, and I think the same about whoever's got a plane. If this plane thing is true, I think it's fucking pathetic, to be perfectly honest. I really do. And it's not representative of all Arsenal fans. And I think even as time goes on and as we've spoken about, perhaps there's a little bit more consensus about what people would like, that, you know, most fans would not get involved in something like that, because it's quite disrespectful, I think, of the manager.
Here's a couple of... So I guess I actually agree with you, but in order to play kind of devil's advocate, what about the fact that these fans feel that the club aren't listening to them and they need to make their opinion heard? And the fact that the fans of the flames of that have been fanned somewhat by the comments of Ivan Gazidis, and even to an extent by Arsene Wenger the other day in his press conference when he was asked about if, you know, the opinions of the supporters will influence his ultimate decision. Do you have any sympathy with the fact that these people are like, well, look, this is my club and I have a view on how it should be governed and I want to make that heard?
Yeah, but they have made it heard, and the club have made it clear that they've heard it as well, because they released a statement last week. Which,
I mean, that's the aim of the statement, presumably, is to be like, look, we hear you don't need to do this. Is that what they were hoping for?
I don't know if that's what they were hoping for, but they certainly got a response from the club, which is much better than silence. Now, I have issues with the statement, and I know you do too, in the sense that, you know, A, it didn't say an awful lot. B, it didn't really achieve what they wanted it to achieve. And C, it felt like more hiding behind Sir Chips Keswick, a 77-year-old figurehead chairman. Still nothing from Stan Kroenke. Still nothing from Ivan Gazidis. You know, why are they so silent?
Gazidis is so quiet. This is the quietest he's ever been.
Yeah, it is. And I think what it is that he is unwilling to say anything on the record now that could be brought up again at some point in the future. You know, I don't think he's too much of a politician to come out and say, I support Arsene Wenger. I think that's what it is.
Because he'll be here next season, and he knows that.
Of course, but at the same time, he's not willing to publicly say that he supports Arsene Wenger, but he and Stan Kroenke have got a 2-year contract on the table for Arsene Wenger. That, by any measure, is an illustration of their support, right? And if they're not willing to come out and publicly say it, that gets my fucking goat up. So look,
hanging him out to dry. I think they, this is a slight sidetrack, but what they need to do if they stand by that contract offer is clarify their reasons for it.
Mm.
They need to be like, we believe Arsene is the right manager for the club based on these things. That is our position. Judge us on that.
Mm. Yeah.
But they won't.
No, they won't. But look, I understand, and people want their voices to be heard. I think the voices have been heard. Whether it becomes a bigger thing, whether it's going to be a movement that grows so much momentum that it requires further attention from the club, I don't quite know. I mean, I guess that's what the aim of the protests is. And, I think we're living through a period where we're just going to have to deal with this on what seems to be almost a weekly basis. That if it's going to happen game after game after game, I don't know if bad results will energize the protests and good results might make it calm down a bit. I just don't know. I mean, that's the thing. So I think it's just part and parcel of what Arsenal are at this moment in time, which is a bit strange.
Yeah, well, look, we got quite far without talking about the manager, but I did have a question here. This is from Phil Thornton, who's at Phil T. Guna on Twitter, and he asks, considering the current state of the club, is there a case for Wenger staying with a transition plan being put in place, or has it gotten so bad that he should go regardless? I feel like there's been moves in the past week or two. I feel like several journalists have kind of slightly rode back on the idea that Arsene will go.
Well,
I don't know if you've noticed that yourself, but that seems to be my observation.
Yeah, I know that Amy Lawrence wrote a piece for The Guardian and has spoken about it. I spoke to Amy last week, and her sense, without any information, just from seeing him in press conferences and what have you, is that he wants to continue, that he wants to stay on as manager. In some ways, as frustrating as it might be for some people, I think there is a reasonable case to put forward that if he stays, it is part of a transition, an actual proper transition towards whoever the new manager is going to be. And we've spoken time and time again about the structures that need to be put in place and directors of football and all those kind of things. So I think there is a reasonable case to be put in to say that if Arsene Wenger stays, it's contingent on him and the club future-proofing whoever is going to come next. To address the issues that exist. Like the scouting department, there are huge questions, as you know, over the scouting department. That's something that's got to be reworked. There's talk of our transfer fixer, Mr. Dick Law, that he might be on his way out. That in itself is an area that could probably be upgraded. Somebody who can come in and help the club attract good players, who can act as a buffer between the manager and the board, or can act as somebody between potential transfer candidates and the manager. Take the onus and take the focus off the workload off the manager, which you could probably argue in some ways it could be contributing to the poor performance. Maybe it is just down to his managerial skills, but maybe if he was just more focused on the managing side of things rather than transfer fees and contracts and, board meetings and everything else, maybe, and I'm not doubting Arsene Wenger's work here, but I think there is a case to be made for that kind of transition. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I don't feel like that is what would happen if Arsene Wenger was to stay, though. Do you?
No, I think you are right. There is a case for it. What I kind of feel is like the opportunity for that probably was 3 years ago and has gone to an extent. I feel like it's almost too toxic now for people to accept that. And I wonder if there is still a case of like the next manager, if there is a new manager this summer, almost has to be regarded as kind of a transitional safe pair of hands anyway. Like, I feel like this isn't the time for, if it's at all possible, for huge revolution. Like, he's not available, but if you could bring in an Ancelotti type, someone who's got that massive experience of European clubs and handling big personalities, everything seems to be water off a duck's back to him, I think that would make more sense in some ways than sort of a bright young coach at this very stage. I feel like there is going to be a two-year transition period regardless of who's in charge.
It's a bit weird, though, isn't it? You know, when you think about it, what happens if, you know, let's say we win the cup and finish top four, and that energizes Arsene Wenger to stay, and the board think, well, that's a successful season. We've got Champions League football next season, and we've won a trophy, and Arsene Wenger stays. What happens to all the people? And, you know, I would include myself in the sense that I think Arsenal need a new manager, and you do too. Where does that leave people going into the next 2 years of football under Arsene Wenger? I mean, the people who are now willing to protest, what do they do? What are they going to do in, you know, is it going to be a protest before every single game for the rest of Arsene Wenger's career? It's mad, isn't it, when you think about it?
I think that's kind of the problem that Arsene faces, really, is that even if he achieves success like that, we've said this for years, but every setback unearths all those gripes and grievances and all that dissatisfaction. You know, so even if he won the FA Cup, and even if he somehow scrabbled up and finished above Spurs in the league this year, got second place, I guarantee you that if we lost on the opening day of next season, or the first major defeat of next season, there would be banners and calls for him to go, in spite of a 2 or 3 year contract, you know. And that, unfortunately, is why I think the toxicity is just too much, because I feel like it's such an uphill struggle now that, I just can't see how it would ever... I mean, his only option, really, is to win every game.
Yeah.
His only option is to repeat the Invincibles season, basically.
But also in the League Cup and the FA Cup and the Champions League.
Kind of. I mean, like, you know...
But, the, you know, you're right,
If Arsene Wenger had the Invincible season now, people would slate him for the Champions League performance.
No, you know, you're right. I mean, there is a point where it reaches a tipping point where, you know, nothing will repair it. In some ways, it's like when fans lose faith in a player. You know, that it's very, very difficult to turn that around. Very difficult to turn that around. And more often than not, it just doesn't happen. That the player moves on, the relationship breaks down to the point where it's irreparable. So
exactly.
You know.
However good form they're in, however, you know, well they're doing, if they then have one bad game, it's like, aha, I knew it was you all along.
Yeah.
I knew that was you, Aaron Ramsey, hiding in there. So that's kind of how I feel. But I do think that whole transition question is a really interesting one, because I just cannot see that in the space of one summer, you know, let's say Arsene Wenger, I don't know, gets the FA Cup final, loses it, the pressure mounts, he feels he can't stay. You know, transfer business will kick off within a fortnight, really, of that game. Arsenal will need to have so much in place. I just don't believe that kind of whirlwind of transition is possible in such a short space of time. So there is going to be an awkward period of us finding our feet, irrespective of who the manager is.
Mm. And just very finally, before we go, go on with this, going back to that statement where they said things would be agreed mutually, you know, if they presented Arsene Wenger with a contract and he's deciding whether or not to sign it, that doesn't speak of a mutual decision at all. So
no.
You know, I think we have to look at that statement and, you know, roll our eyes a little bit. But okay, I think we should move on. Let's get a couple more in and see if we can change the tone a little bit as well. So, this one comes from Scott Baker at Scotty_Baker, and he says, Ian Wright is a boss. We talked about him a bit earlier. He said at 28 years old in 1991, he cost $2.5 million. What would he have been worth if that was today?
Wow, an awful lot of money, an awful lot of money. I mean, $2.5 million. Was that a record at the time?
Could have been the Arsenal record, I think, yes.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, to be fair, this is a hard question to answer because I don't know what footballers are worth anymore. Somebody else tweeted in and asked how much Alexis was worth, and I was like, it's very difficult to say because, as we talked about in the summer, the kind of sense of value of what is a £20 million player, what is a £30 million player, has slightly gone out the window. It's just what crazy price are people prepared to pay. For a goal scorer like Ian Wright, I mean, you know, you could pluck out any number. You could pluck out £50 million, couldn't you? I mean, it's difficult to define.
But I mean,
what would, yeah, you know, what would Lukaku fetch on the open market?
Okay, but like, you know, imagine signing a 28-year-old striker from Crystal Palace now. What the fuck would people be saying? They'd be going, what's going on here? You know, that's the remarkable thing, that he was 28 years of age when he joined Arsenal and beat the goal-scoring record. You know, the idea of us signing a 28-year-old striker from Crystal Palace now, I know the football world is different and everything else, but that would make people's head explode, I think.
That's true. I mean, who is a Crystal Palace striker now? I can't even think.
Benteke. Yeah.
Benteke, there you go. And to be fair, he's a bit of a big fish in that pond, you know. Beyond that, I don't even know who you're looking at.
Yeah.
I know who you are, actually. It's Benteke's brother. He's the backup.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Ian Wright was absolutely my favourite player, really, at the time. I absolutely adored him. And it was the showmanship as well as the ability. And in that clip with Chris Sutton, he talks about scoring chips with his left foot. His chipped, dinked finishes were my absolute favourite thing. He seemed to be able to dink it over the keeper however close to goal he was, whatever position the goalkeeper was, he could find that little dink or put a keeper on the ground. Just an absolutely sublime, brilliant, brilliant finisher.
Yeah, there's a video I just retweeted actually a bit earlier. So what I'll do is, if you go to this post on arseblog.com, if you're listening to the podcast, you want to see Ian Wright finishing that way, go to the post on the website that contains this Arsecast Extra, and there's just so many amazing finishes in there from Ian Wright. You know, and a bit of a cunt as well. You know, on the pitch he could be a bit nasty, as with all the great players like Bergkamp. He had that bit of edge to him as well, which was fantastic. But yeah, an amazing, just an amazing finisher, and to do what he did and achieve what he did at Arsenal in terms of the goals he scored, joining the club at 28 years of age, is just fucking unbelievable.
Exactly. Shouldn't hold you back, Lucas Perez. Look what can happen. there's your inspiration. Okay, let's have this question from John Foster, who's at Super Johnny Foz on Twitter. He says, I am flying back from my honeymoon in April, landing on the 22nd in the afternoon. Now, for those who don't know, that is the possible date of our FA Cup semi-final. I have brought up changing the flights, but my wife was not happy. How can I change the flights so I can experience inevitable devastation firsthand and still remain married?
Well, you know, he could be overthinking this. Going on his honeymoon, coming back the 22nd of April. What time did he say he was coming in?
In the afternoon, I think he said.
Right. Look.
Yeah, lunchtime.
Lunchtime. So what, it could easily be a 5:30 kickoff.
They often are, to my immense irritation at Wembley, aren't they? They're sort of needlessly stupid kickoff times.
Yeah, I would imagine that they're going to do that for both the semi-finals. They'll be played in consecutive days, won't they, at Wembley? So
yeah,
probably 5:30 kickoffs, both of them. So land, drop your wife home, make her a nice dinner, leave it on the stove for her. You say, look, we've had a marvelous time on our honeymoon. It's been fun and sexy and interesting. I don't know this guy personally. I assume that that's what honeymoons are about. I'm going to go and watch Arsenal now. We've had our fun. I think that's reasonable.
I agree. It's going to be fine. I think, you know, look, also we might well be on the Sunday, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Knowing our luck, we'll be on a pitch that's been absolutely torn to pieces by the game that's played on the Saturday.
Exactly.
So don't worry about it. Marital bliss awaits. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to be honest, depending on the draw, maybe just stay on the honeymoon anyway. You know, I think it might be preferable.
All right, a couple of questions involving Aaron Ramsey here. I like this one from at Braggied, who's got an Icelandic name, which I think is Braggy Hafporsen. Hafporsen. I'm struggling.
Half portion.
Okay. Bragging half portion. He says, now that we have finally walked the ball into the net, Ramsey's, do you think we might try shooting from outside? which amused me quite a bit. There was another one. How do you view Aaron Ramsey smashing the ball in from 1 centimeter out against a non-league team? And then this
I bet you loved that. I bet you loved it.
It was absolutely fantastic. I laughed my head off when I saw that because he just went around and went, ah, fuck it, right, and roll it in, just blast it. At Shane Lust wants to know, should Aaron Ramsey have stopped the ball on the line and got down on his hands and knees to head it in for a laugh?
I think he should have done. He hasn't got too many headed goals in his Arsenal career, so that would be a nice way to sort of up the balance. There's a great photograph, actually. I forget. I think it might be Stuart McFarlane. I'm not sure. But it's of Aaron Ramsey just booting the ball into the net, and you can see the goalkeeper just sat on the floor looking sad at that moment. And it's a brilliant photograph because it was a nice bit of skill, actually, to completely take the keeper out of the game. It was cruel, but the kind of cruelty that I enjoy.
Yes, yes. But you know what, though? There is a danger that if he had done that, the goal might not have counted. Because do you remember a couple of weeks ago, was it Marco Verratti playing for PSG did something similar? He knelt down and headed the ball from just outside the box back to his goalkeeper, into the arms of the goalkeeper, and he got booked. And there was a free kick given, I think. So it must be, there must be something, I don't know if it's something in the laws of the game. Maybe it's unsportsmanlike behavior. I don't quite know what it is, but I would have I'd love to see somebody do that at some point. It would be the most Aaron Ramsey thing of all time, wouldn't it? To pull off that nice bit of skill, go around the goalkeeper, stop the ball on the line, kneel down, head it over or head it into the net, and then get booked and the goal be disallowed. Yeah. That would be the most Aaron Ramsey thing I could think of.
I mean, definitely Granit Xhaka would be booked for it. There's no doubt about that. What about this one? This was from Mike, who's at Mook on Twitter. I think I pronounced that right. And he said, Gibbs had a good game on Saturday. Can you see him winning more game time over Monreal?
Maybe, but I don't see him staying at the club in the long term. Mm. Don't see it. I think there's
a bit of an uncertainty about that position, isn't there? Because they seem to be sort of rotating in and out a little bit at the moment. Not clear who Arsene Wenger really fancies there.
Yeah, I think we do have a bit of an issue there. I think it's something that the club are looking at. Certainly there's been a lot of left-backs linked. And, Kieran Gibbs is a good player, but has never really quite kicked on the way that we thought he might. So, between now and the end of the season, they might interchange a bit depending on how the manager views things, and maybe Monreal is carrying a bit of a knock. And but I think in the longer term we're going to have to work out something in that particular position. We've got one more here, okay? And this comes from Alistair Wood at Ali Boy 82. He says, gentlemen, when it comes to bar snacks, are you inclined to a modern gastropub snack, such as a kettle chip, or a traditional classic, such as a pork scratching or a scampi fry?
Great question. I must add, there are some crisps on the market. I don't know if anyone out there is, who works for crisps, but there are some crisps on the market I've heard are absolutely delicious. They are salt and vinegar chip shop flavoured.
What?
Chips. Crisps, yeah.
By who? Who
makes
these?
I think they're Walkers. I'm Googling now. Walkers salt and vinegar chip. Is that what I'm saying? I don't know. But like they're the flavour of chips from a chip shop. It sounds absolutely incredible.
But shouldn't salt and vinegar be that flavour anyway?
No, but I think they're much saltier and vinegarier than we could possibly envisage. They're McCoy's. McCoy's chips, crinkled chips, with a full chip shop flavour, and it's chip shop salt and vinegar. I've got to try it.
Do you know what? I think we ought to. Yeah, I would like to try that too. I would like to try perhaps a couple of boxes of those.
Yeah.
Delicious McCoy's salt and vinegar.
McCoy's.
The best McCoy's there is.
Can get. The real McCoy's. I do like a crisp in a pub. I'm going to give away how sort of middle class I am here, but like there's a pub near me where they serve like little sort of saucisson, like little cured meat chorizo-y bites.
Ooh.
That's great. That's a great concept. Yeah. But pork scratchings, I'm in two minds about. I find them delicious, but I'm also acutely aware of how disgusting they are. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I love a bit of pork scratchings too, or yeah, the Marks and Spencers again. If we're going very middle class here, sell nice bags of them. Pork crackling and stuff like that. So. And they do bags of pork scratchings as well. But, you know, to me, they're, you know, the top of the list, salted peanuts. When you're in a bar, can't beat a salted peanut for me.
I was going to say, I'm not a peanut guy. That would be probably bottom. That would be below.
What?
That'd be below crisps. It'd be below,
scampi fries.
You know, the sort of cured meat thing, flatbread and hummus, you know, the kind of things I have in a pub. Like, genuinely, salted peanuts.
What about the pretzel? You probably like mixed nuts with fruit bits.
Yeah, I like, you know, sort of wasabi peanuts or something like that. I don't know, just salted peanuts for me, it's a bit bland, bit down the middle. There's not salty enough for me.
What about?
I need more salt.
All right, no, for me, absolutely top of the list. Salted peanuts, and then you could easily go down, you know, to dry roasted nuts, scampi fries. Sure. There's, what are the other ones? Bacon fries.
I like those.
Bacon fries are quite good. The artificialness of the scampi and bacon fries is something to behold. That they taste vaguely like the thing that they're supposed to taste like, but also like they've just come from a machine, like a robot.
No scampi were harmed in the making of these scampi fries. Yes,
exactly. But what about, how do you stand on, you know, like the pretzel sticks? You know, the sticks that look like they're encased in shoe leather? What about those?
Yeah. I don't know, actually. I'm not sure I'm encountering them enough, really, to have a firm opinion. Do you like them?
I find them unusually Moorish. I eat them and go, God, these aren't really very nice. Nom, 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 nom. I'll have some more, though. Nom, 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 nom.
Have a theory that when I was growing up, in restaurants, you used to get breadsticks all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like long sticks of crispy bread.
Yeah.
And I feel like now they're not around anymore.
Maybe. It's been a while.
I feel like now people are chopping up proper bread. Whereas before, you have these long breadsticks. You're like, what do you do with it? Can you butter it? What's the situation? You know, obviously you can pretend it's a magic wand or whatever, but beyond that. And now I feel like they're approaching extinction.
Yeah, now it's like, well, here's your sourdough focaccia.
Exactly, with some olive oil or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, go give us some fucking sticks of bread that don't go off for 5 years.
I think that was why they were so popular, right? They just last forever. Maybe they weren't always breadsticks. They just slowly hardened over time into them.
Yeah.
But I think it's got to be... If I'm feeling like giving myself a treat, it's going to be pork scratchings, but I will be appalled at myself simultaneously as I eat them.
All right. Okay, well, look, nothing like bar snacks to divide people further. That's another thing.
And if anyone from McCoy's is listening, you know where we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let you tweet at them and, it worked with the jam. It worked with the jam, so.
Dip our salty McCoy's in our raspberry jam.
I still have a couple of jars of the apricot stuff left.
Yeah. Plenty left over.
All right. Okay.
Well, lifetime supply.
A lifetime supply, eh? Come on. Linesman's 5 yards away. Right, we will leave it there, I think, for this week's Arscast Extra. We've got a game against West Brom at the weekend. That's not going to be easy. They're a bit.
I suddenly sort of looked at that the other day and was like, oh.
No.
The reason I haven't been paying much attention to that, but that'll be tricky.
Yeah, I think it will be. But we will discuss that in the Arscast on Friday. We'll be back next. Oh, there's an Arscast. Oh, it's St. Patrick's Day on Friday as well. So it is. All right. Right, well, we'll be here on Monday to discuss whatever happens in the West Brom game. Then it's an interlull.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
But we'll deal with that as well as we can, hopefully on the back of a win against West Brom. We'll talk to you on Friday and again next Monday. So until then, cheers.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.